Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin and go to Australia to speak with Vivian Altman, a senior producer on ABC TV's Foreign Correspondent program that broke the story of Prisoner X, who died 2 years ago in a secret Israeli prison where he's locked up under a false identity. Following extraordinary efforts by Prime Minister Netanyahu to muzzle the Israeli press from covering the story based on revelations from Australia's Foreign Correspondent program, we will discuss what is known about an Australian who was recruited by Mossad and apparently knew too many secrets that he took to his grave. Then we'll go to London and speak with the deputy editor of the satirical magazine Private Eye, Francis Ween, about a new outbreak of scandal engulfing Rupert Murdoch's British newspaper empire following yesterday's arrest of six former journalists with the now-defunct News of the World tabloid. We will discuss the likelihood of additional hundreds of millions of pounds being paid out in settlements and whether new press restrictions that the police and parliament are pushing will set back freedom of the press in the UK, where journalists already operate under onerous and antiquated libel laws. Then finally, we'll discuss this weekend's nationwide demonstrations against the controversial Keystone XL pipeline with May Bouvier, who is the executive director and co-founder of 350.org, which is leading the largest climate demonstration in Washington, D.C. at the National Mall on Sunday. Also joining me in the studio is the organizer of Tar Sands Action Southern California, Jack Eyte, who, in conjunction with actions across the country, is leading a rally in downtown Los Angeles, Solve the Climate Crisis, Take a Stand, Mr. President. Joining us now is Vivian Altman, who is joining us from Australia. She has been a journalist for over 25 years and has worked all over the world in radio and television. She's a senior producer and journalist at the Foreign Correspondent Program, ABC TV, that's the Australian Broadcasting Commission, and has won many international awards, including 2 Golden World medals, 3 silver medals, and 1 bronze medal at the New York Film and Television Festivals for stories in Colombia, India, Iran, and Ecuador. She was also twice nominated as a Walkley finalist, that's the equivalent of the Pulitzer Prize, for stories in Yemen and Iran, and has won a UN Environmental Award for a story in Bolivia. Welcome to Background Briefing, Vivian Altman.
Good morning.
Of course.
Or is it afternoon? I'm sorry.
No, it's evening here. I know it's the next.
Oh, good evening.
And I know you're already in Friday, so no matter what you do, you're ahead of us, Vivian.
Okay.
So tell me about the Australian, Ben Zygier, I guess is the pronunciation, who, from what your documentary has revealed, appears to have been recruited by Israel's Foreign Intelligence Service, the Mossad, in Melbourne. Apparently, he was a blue-eyed fellow who obviously didn't look particularly Middle Eastern and had an Australian passport, and apparently did operations for the Israelis, and then mysteriously died 2 years ago in an Israeli prison under a false identity. Let's begin with his recruitment in Melbourne, because apparently his father is a prominent member of Melbourne's Jewish community, is he not?
Yes, his father, Jeffrey Zygier, is a very prominent member of the Melbourne Jewish community. He's held quite a number of executive official positions. In relation to Ben, well, Ben grew up in Melbourne, went to Jewish schools, studied law at one of the main universities in Melbourne, and at some time during that, I think about perhaps in the year 2000, went over to Israel and went into the army, did his, you know, went to Israel for a year, did this the sort of gap year thing that young men and women from the diaspora do, went to Israel, went into the army, spent a bit of time at a kibbutz, and then came back to Australia and continued his or started his legal studies. Then later on, I think, returned to Israel, and it's not absolutely clear, but it would appear that he was recruited by Mossad, probably in Australia, and then went to live in Israel, eventually meeting and getting together, marrying an Israeli woman, and they went on to have 2 young children. He seemed, everything that we can glean, he was a very bright, intelligent young man with a lot of promise, a lovely, sensitive young man. who probably, I mean, it's hard to really know, just got in over his head, I think, or too deep. But yes, it's a very long and complicated and extraordinary story.
And of course, Vivian Ottman, nobody seems to know why he was arrested and why he was in prison under such extraordinary circumstances. The story is has been covered over here by the New York Times, but not it hasn't gotten much else traction. But in Israel, it is a roiling story. But it's mostly taken on the cast of being about Israel's onerous censorship laws. And it's led to the extraordinary situation where Prime Minister Netanyahu apparently met with the editors of all Israel's major newspapers and the heads of their television networks and threatened them if they reported on your story. That's pretty much what happened, isn't it?
Well, that happened initially. And then there was, in fact, a negotiation between the head of Mossad, I think, and the editors-in-chief and owners of print and other media, broadcast media. And I think the journalists in Israel are very courageous, but they were also very angry because it was just absurd. You know, of course, anyone could watch the program by just clicking on our link. And in fact, what you have is a situation where social media has, in fact, really made things different. So Israel, in reality, is not able to keep the story out of Israel. So, in fact, I think that there was some kind of negotiation that went on. They agreed, or they didn't agree, but in fact, the following day, the media organisations were represented in court. They were able to get the gag order changed, not completely lifted, but it meant that the foreign correspondent story could be broadcast on, you know, various television channels. It could be discussed, but there continue to be some limitations, and I think they include that journalists in Israel are not able to pursue the story any further. They are absolutely banned from talking or pursuing the wife, the family in Israel. But certainly it has raised a huge discussion in Israel, and I think that there will be some changes in general in relation to gag orders in the future.
What was the role of Australian intelligence in this? Because they seem to have had this story ahead of you, I take it. And they seem to be concerned about not just this Australian who died in the Israeli prison, but a couple of other Australian operatives in Mossad. And, of course, they returned to Australia to renew their passports. And apparently having an Australian passport and going on these operations in the Middle East was in a very important bonus, if you will, which may have been partially why they were recruited in the first place.
Look, absolutely. Having an Australian passport is a bonus, and it seems that there were three Australians who had been living in the Middle East and who had been recruited by the Mossad, who basically had European Jewish surnames, but who at various times during the 2000s, late 2000s probably, or mid to late, came back to Australia and got different passports. So, for example, in the case of Ben Zaga, he had passports. Well, we found that he had passports in three names, but since our story has broken, it seems that he may have had passports in four names. There were two other people involved. It is said that they were working for a European communications agency, but in fact that they did travel to Syria, Lebanon and Iran. And, you know, as you mentioned before, you know, having an Australian passport, having an Australian Anglo name and looking, you know, like an Anglo-Australian, more European than Middle Eastern, obviously, you're a very attractive person to an organisation like the Mossad.
And what do we know about what he did for Mossad, which obviously had something to do with him being imprisoned under such extraordinary circumstances, whether he was attempting to be a whistleblower or whatever it was? Do we know anything about his operations? Was he involved, for example, in the Dubai debacle over the killing of the Hamas operative?
Well, look, there's a certain amount of speculation about that at the moment. You'd be aware that there's some information that came out of, I think, Kuwait yesterday, or our last night yesterday, which is essentially, that is Australian last night, about him having, about Benazir having been involved in the Dubai hit. It's, I don't know, and I think the sources that were quoted, Western sources were quoted, and there was a photo that was put up suggesting it might have been actually him who had taken part in the hit. But look, we don't know that for sure. I think that there is one thing that probably, or two things that can be said. One, whatever he was doing, it was very serious. The Israelis didn't like it. They weren't happy about it. And two, he probably was about to spill the beans. Now, whether that was because there was a one report that said that he had gone to Dubai and said that he would give them information on the basis of being given protection. There are other reports which may have more credibility that say he was about to give information to the Australian government. It seems that something was going on. Possibly he was about to spill the beans and he was arrested.
And then he was literally locked up. They threw away the key, put him under a false identity in this top security prison. And he essentially disappeared first. And then sometime later, they were found out that he was arrested. And that the family knew and a lawyer knew, but nobody else knew. And it was a state secret, was it not, in Israel?
Absolutely. The case of Prisoner X, as in Benazir, was an, you know, people weren't allowed to talk about it. I mean, there were several gag orders. I think the first gag order came down in March. Remember, he was arrested in February. It seems there was contradictory information. We talked to the foreign minister just a couple of days before our story went to air.
That's Bob the Australian Carr, foreign minister, right?
The Australian foreign minister, Bob Carr. And he said to us, he told us that DFAT, that is Australian Foreign Affairs, had not been briefed, was not aware during the time that Benazir was in jail that he was in jail. And the only time that they found out that he was in jail was when he died, and the family asked him to actually assist, give consular assistance to help them bring his body back to Australia for burial. Now, that has since changed in the sense that it now appears that certainly the Australian, the International Australian Security Organisation, which is ASIS, was informed about almost immediately after he was arrested. And it seems that certain people in foreign affairs were also informed, but the Australian government was satisfied because they were told they sought assurances from the Israelis that Benazir would be given legal representation and, you know, decent conditions, and they didn't go any further. It also seems that the Australian ambassador in Tel Aviv may have been aware of the fact that he was, you know, in this secret jail. However, that is why the Australian Foreign Minister, Bob Carr, has called for an inquiry, which the results of which are expected probably sometime next week, into the handling of the whole affair.
So there is some question as to whether he got sufficient support from Australia. Is that what you're saying?
I think so. I think that's certainly something that is being questioned and discussed at the moment.
But, Vivian Altman, nobody knows why he went into jail in the first place, what he did. and why he was such a threat to Israeli security that they went to such extraordinary lengths with these gag orders and this secret imprisonment. And the issues surrounding his death are also shrouded in mystery, are they not?
Yes, they certainly are. I mean, you know, the official death certificate says, you know, asphyxiation by hanging, but his lawyer, one of the lawyers who visited him, and I've seen contrary reports 1 or 2 days before, claims that he was very he was worried about his case. He was negotiating, or they were negotiating, with the state prosecutor's office in Israel about. He was doing a plea bargain, but he was in a reasonable state of mind. He was very focused, very clear. His wife was just about to have a second baby. I mean, literally, I think 4 days after he died, his wife had a second baby. He had everything to live for. And, of course, the question is being asked, you have a very secure, you know, a high-security jail. You have a hermetically sealed cell, which is supposed to be, which was the cell that was built especially for the assassin of Yitzhak Rabin. You have been, you know, it seems that there was constant monitoring, CCTV footage. So there's something odd, or shall we say, there are different views about what might have happened to him in relation to his death.
Well, Vivian Altman, I thank you very much for joining us here and for the film that you produced for the TV show that you produced for ABC, Australian Broadcasting Commission Television, the foreign correspondent program that has had so many international repercussions. One can only hope it is played over here at some point, and I thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Again, I've been speaking with Vivian Altman from Australia. She's been a journalist for 25 years and has worked all over the world in radio and television. She is a senior producer and journalist at the Foreign Correspondent Program, ABC TV in Australia. She has won many international awards, and she has also been twice nominated as a Walkley finalist. That's the equivalent of the Pulitzer Prize for stories in Yemen, Iran, and won the UN Environmental Award for a story on Bolivia. We're going to take a brief station break. We'll be back talking about, go to London to talk about the latest scandals surrounding Rupert Murdoch.